It's blazing hot outside. You get in your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy, all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro Recharge Kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Open Concessions Podcast presented by Toyota. We feature a weekly in-depth conversation with a Chicago Cubs, or in this case, Major League Baseball-related personality. We are your hosts alongside Jim Deshaies. I'm Len Casper, the Cubs television tandem. How are you, JD?
I'm well, Len. How are you this fine morning?
Doing great. Looking forward to getting the season underway in just over a week. And we'll talk more about that a little later. Our guest today is longtime ESPN Major League Baseball play-by-play man, John Shamby. John and I worked together in Florida when he did radio for the Marlins. I did television at the time. We are roughly the same age, so we kind of come at it from a similar perspective. And I know you know John Boog Shamby really well.
Yeah, I'm really anxious to spend a few minutes with Boog. He's a fun guy, sharp guy, and he always has good takes on the state of the game. And I want to get some dirt on Len Casper, too.
Oh, you will. I have no doubts about that. So, without further delay, enjoy our conversation with John Boog Shamby. Boog, how are you today? Good to talk to you, man.
Good to talk to you guys. Doing well here in New York City and getting ready to do KBO baseball tomorrow and then Major League Baseball next week.
Yeah, let's start with the KBO stuff. So some interesting hours you are keeping in terms of the game times in Korea, and you're calling the games from home. What has that process been like for you?
The sleep component has been especially challenging because for a 5:25 a.m. Eastern time game, I'm getting up at around 3. And it's just been kind of wacky on so many different fronts. From a technical standpoint, we're effectively taking a Zoom call feed of a Korean broadcast. We have control over nothing as it relates to the shots they're showing us, their production elements, their replays. We can squeeze back the screen and do graphics and that type of thing, but it's pretty limited. So it effectively would be like turning the volume down on a big league broadcast and trying to do play-by-play and color over that and not knowing what's coming next. And then, you know, there are the names. There's learning an entire league. There's the fact that two different times, 10 minutes to air, they've said, okay, so the game that you were going to do got rained out. You're going to do a different game. So there's that. And then, you know, just the technical standpoint, we turned it into a little bit of a talk show. We've had guests on to talk Major League to help inform us on KBO. So I basically describe it as like 3 hours of log rolling, and you're just trying not to fall in. And every once in a while, they toss me some chainsaws and I juggle those too while I'm on the block.
But even with all that, they sing a song about you though, right? They're cheerleaders, right? And there's the Boog Shamby song. I mean, so it's all worth it, right? I mean, once you get that.
Once you get to that point, JD, it really, it's fulfilling. And I do find myself wandering around the house. It's nice when you're singing a song where the main lyrics are your name. So you're basically speaking in third person, and I'm just wandering around the house doing a little bit of cleaning or whatever, and I'm just gently, you know, humming ESPN Boog Shamby, wow, you know. It's been super.
Quality of play. I know there are some former major league players. Dan Straley, an ex-Cub, is pitching in that league. What's the quality of play like?
So everybody wants to convert it to one level. I think I convert the three segments. So I would start with they can hit. And it's not like Japan in terms of the bodies are different. They're bigger bodies. It's not small ball. There's not a lot of bunting. You have guys that swing hard and really know how to hit. And that is the discipline that they concentrate on the most in Korea is hitting. So that's the best level. I would say every lineup, even the non-foreign players, has probably two to three guys that are, I think, could probably swing on a major league roster. I think it's AAA-ish level hitting. The 7, 8, 9 guys on most teams are not particularly capable. Pitching is, the stuff is nowhere near. The average fastball in the league is 88.3 miles an hour, but there is craft, pitchability, guys know what they're doing. The one aspect that's really been disappointing that's hard is the defense. I think that the defense is probably not even quite to the level of the top level SEC or ACC college baseball programs. It's just fundamentally unsound. They're not particularly athletic. The outfield arms are really bad. I would say twice a game, legitimately twice a game, a play is not made that I'm sitting there going, wow, that's bad. So that's the kind of the way I'd put it together. They can hit. The pitching is very, you know, American League 1980s, pitch backwards, pick, pick, pick type stuff, flipping a lot of breaking stuff in there, a lot of 1-0, 2-1 counts, and the defense is bad.
Interesting. So as you now get ready for a major league season, and I believe you're going to call games remotely from the studio, correct?
To begin. And then sort of TBD. So, I'm going to be in studio to begin, but my partners will be at home.
Okay. So you're ready to go. I mean, you've been calling games off a monitor for quite some time. We're going to have the booth shot. They have a locked off camera, I guess, what they call the high home shot.
Yep.
Do you have that available for KBO? Because to me, that's the key shot you need to have, because I'm guessing for you, the most challenging call off a program monitor is the ball in the gap where you've got bases loaded. So who's scoring? Where's the ball? And you're trying to keep track of everything, right?
So, yes. In fact, when we started to move towards MLB, they asked me what's one thing that needs to change or what you'd need. And that's what I said, basically the baseball version of all 22. So we're going to have a locked off high home, and that will be pretty crucial just because – there's so many components to where the defense sets up, where the ball's going, how well the ball's hit, all of that. So I think that is the number one thing that'll change that will be helpful, helpful for us to have. And then, there are other little shot things that we're going to be able. I think, Sunday night, obviously, we'll control all the cameras, but even on when we're taking your feed, I think we may have a camera or two that we have access to manipulating on our own. So, but the high home shot is crucial to really call it, because also remember, I'm not just doing, it's especially crucial for calling games on the radio, because, in order to describe and really talk about where the ball's going and what's happening, you've got to have that locked off high home shot.
Or you could just make it up.
There is that too, and I've been doing.
If you're doing radio and nobody's actually seeing the pictures, it's whatever you want it to be.
This is correct. This is absolutely correct. Well, how's it been? I mean, how was that for? I mean, you guys haven't done it yet. Where you haven't done it? You've done it from the ballpark, correct?
We've been at the park. We have one road game before we start. An exhibition game, but we've been at the park, and those games have been we did a scrimmage last night, and JD can chime in, but other than the fake crowd noise, everything and no fans in the stands, everything else felt pretty normal to me. I want to get back to baseball, but you are not only a New York City native, you live in New York currently, and you guys went through hell. How are things now, and what was that like over the last 3 months?
It was hard and odd, and it's weird to see the city this way. I mean, look, one of the, you know, most seismic events in our country's history is September 11th. And yet, the stretch of a month from basically, you know, March 18th to around April 18th, well, it was incredible the way, I mean, you'd have to work hard to get hit by a car in the city. You know, like I've put them up on social media, but I could walk down to Park Avenue, you know, in the 70s, and inside of 30 seconds, I could take a picture down Park Avenue that would capture the MetLife building, and again, inside of 30 seconds, and not have a single car in it at 11:30 in the morning.
Wow.
And it was like I Am Legend. It was something out of a movie. And I am not someone that I'm not an anxious person by nature, and yet that stretch of just going out to the stores a couple of times a day, did I touch my face? Was my mask up? It was stressful, and I mean you still feel it now, but I'd say 85 to 90% of the folks outside are wearing masks. New York City in the summer shuts down a bit, so it's naturally quieter, and yet even with that, it's distinctly different than it was in March, April, and May than now. Now, I mean, you know, the other day on a Thursday in the afternoon, there was bumper to bumper traffic on Second Avenue near where I live. So it's still quiet. I think, and you notice, you know, how many stores are closed. So I think even now the average person coming here would notice a significant difference. And yeah, it's hard. It's weird to see my city this way. And I've wandered to the park and gone down south, but consistently when I live in this city, I'm all over the city. And during this stretch, I've really stayed in a much more closed area, kind of encompassed by the area around my house, give or take, like, you know, I'd say a half mile to a mile in each direction.
So, Boog, New Yorkers, fairly or unfairly, are oftentimes characterized as being a little edgy, a little prickly. Yeah. Do you anticipate a kinder, softer New Yorker going forward? That would kind of be disappointing, wouldn't it?
I mean, I maintain this. I would probably disagree with you in terms of, I think that that's the perception. Here's my 2-cent take would be this on New Yorkers. I think this is what people misinterpret. There are so many people in this city that it creates this natural situation where every person is just paying attention to themselves. There's so many people that it's like white noise, that it's like every person is surrounded by this bubble. So they give off a real indifference or active aggression that I don't think is actually so. I think it's what people from outside feel. But it's just what gets created by the size of the population density and the way the buildings are on top of each other. But I've always maintained that if you were to puncture the bubble of the average New Yorker stranger and ask them for help, you know, I'm someone that's had a bunch of surgeries, you know, over the course of the last 6-7 years and been on crutches a lot in the city, and the kindness that's been, you know, shown to me. So I would ultimately say that if you puncture that bubble, I do think that New York City residents are kind and good people, and there's plenty of connection to be had. I think people are still stressed about it. I think New York's handled it well, but you still see, you know, people getting agitated when people aren't wearing masks and that type of thing. So that's my New York City take.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you. I think the attitude in New York is, this is crazy, this is nuts, welcome, let's go, here we go, as opposed to, what are you doing here? I think there is an understanding that it's an international city. They know that a lot of people there are not from there, and you just kind of have to get on that carousel. There are other cities that are not so friendly where it's like, oh, you're not from here. But I haven't gotten that vibe in New York other than it's just really fast paced.
Yeah, that's why I brought it up. I wanted Boog to have a chance to defend his fair city. When I went to college, being from the most rural parts of northern New York, it was the first time I was exposed to guys from the city. And initially, I was like, "Oh my goodness!" I mean, because they were loud, and they were so these guys are insane. And then most of them proved to be the best friends I ever had while I was in college. I mean, it's just a different vibe, a different pace, but wonderful people.
I can remember, by the way, I don't know whether JD, whether you remember this, but I was I don't even know what I was doing, where I was going, but I was around Grand Central one day. I don't know how many years ago, but you were with the Astros and we ran into each other on the street right around. You're obviously you're with the Astros. You're staying at that Hyatt.
Right.
But do you remember that? Just running into each other. Like it was like on Vanderbilt or right around there. Literally just two people recognizing each other in New York City, just bumping into each other.
Yeah. Well, twice in the last 3 years, I've been walking back to my hotel from lunch and I bumped into a guy I went to college with.
Oh,
hey Murph, and we just kept walking. Hey Murph, how you doing, man?
Oh, that's great.
I haven't seen him in 30 years.
Well, in the 03 World Series, when Boog and I were with the Marlins, being on the team bus going from that Hyatt to the Bronx, I mean, just everybody knew. Everybody who did know it was the Florida Marlins team bus. I mean, they were giving us the finger, but it was like. It was fun and it was funny, right? Yeah. It didn't come off as nasty.
Yeah. Well, the iconic one was that guy. Whenever you left the Grand Hyatt on the team bus, there was a men's store just up the street a little bit. And as the bus passed by, he'd sneak out of the store. He ran it, managed it, worked there, and he'd moon the bus. And it was like every day on any way to the ballpark, that guy would come out and moon the bus.
Super Joe from Portobello.
Yeah, I never knew his name, so that's it. Yeah.
All right, so as we tie these two things together here, JD and I talk all the time on and off the air about our concerns of whether or not Major League Baseball and all the other sports can pull this off. And it you say day to day, but it truly feels day to day. What's your big concern about how Major League Baseball is navigating through this?
I don't even know that I could say that there's one. I think that it feels unsteady. It feels like there's 8 billion questions that we could ask to leadership types and get I don't know as an answer. I mean, I'm sure you guys have discussed this, but like what happened the other day at your workout? And a pending test, and you could tweak it a million times. But what if that's a 1 o'clock game? Are those guys coming to the park? What if it's somebody wakes up at 9 a.m. with symptoms, gets tested, and you know he's had contact with a lot of people, and the test isn't done by 1 o'clock? Is he allowed to play? Are the people that were in contact with him allowed to play? Let's say he gets tested. And he's positive and you play, but he doesn't play and you're a road team. Now you know all these people have had contact with him. Do you let all those people get on a plane together? Also, does that guy then just stay in a hotel with symptoms? And it's like, all right, see you later. Let us know how you're feeling. There's a million of them and no one has an answer for it. And I don't know what we do. And then the other part of it is, I think this is a big one. a day game or whatever, a positive test. I mean, I'll use your players just as a hypothetical. But Anthony Rizzo tests positive, the ripple effect in that clubhouse, if at 2 o'clock it's found out that Anthony Rizzo tests positive, these guys are going to be on their phones. Chris Bryant's going to call his wife and be like, should I play? Jason Hayward's, do I need to play? Like the intangible emotional effect of in season somebody testing positive close to a game, I think it's going to freak some people out. And I just, when I start to go through some of these, there is a part of me that's like, what are we doing?
It's a great, yeah. And I think, you know, all those questions are legit and they are unanswerable. And I think, you know, I think some of the answers are a little obvious. And that is if a prominent player midseason, right before the game, is told he's tested positive, that's going to freak everybody out. I think the way tougher and the more likely scenario is the one about the test results. And JD, we talked about, our team's going to be essentially responsible for themselves if 7 or 8 tests are not back and it's a starting pitcher and it's a big game. Do you hold your own players out? Does MLB have some sort of representative at every ballpark that is administering this stuff? It's really a gray area.
Yeah, I would think MLB would, if they haven't already, would be putting together some guidelines for how teams should universally address that situation. I don't think you should leave it up to the individual clubs, because I think some clubs are going to be, by nature, just a little more mindful than others. So, yeah, and I don't know what the guideline is, but my hunch would be if there's no clarity on testing, then those players should probably be kept away from the ballpark. The analogy I made the other day was you're behind somebody trying to learn how to skate, and they're wobbling and they're about to go down, and you're just hoping they stay up. So that's kind of where we're at.
I think the other thing is, look, not to, this is a conversation we've all had, you know, off the air, but I would just make this point. I know, for me, ridiculously, this has turned into something that's gotten politicized, but I would make the point that one thing that bothers me is that risk in some arguments is classified only as death. And what I would make the point is, go ask Freddie Freeman and Tommy Hotovy if they think what happened to them would be considered, you're risking something for that to happen. It's a rhetorical question. Yeah. And I'm not saying, I know that that doesn't happen to everyone. It's the thing, they still don't know so many things about this. Why does it affect some people so powerfully and other people less powerfully? They're not sure, but there's risk involved that doesn't involve death, and you can't have everybody getting sick. Just can't.
And I would also say, we all talk to a lot of people inside the game. We're talking players, managers, coaches, front office people. These are conversations they're all having. I have not gotten any sort of pushback from anyone personally or specifically saying, we're fine. I think everybody's concern level, Boog, is red, right? It's not even orange. I mean, I think everyone understands all these questions.
JD, I'll give you this, and this is completely anecdotal, but just to get your take on it. Think about if this were taking place, say, 10, 15 years ago, because I would volunteer. I think this is correct. Again, it's anecdotal. But wouldn't you guys say the average age of coaches has declined? Like, I mean, think about all the guys you've been around as coaches that are not, they're still on the field, but there aren't as many of them. But think how many more of them there were 15 years ago that would be in a super vulnerable place, that they would be absolutely in the vulnerable group. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely, yeah. And that's, you know, some coaches have opted out. Back in the day, I just think back to some of those clubs I was on. Now it's a lot more than 10 or 15 years ago, but I would say the average age of our coaching staff was, average age was probably, you know, 65-ish on, right, some of those staffs. It's I guess we're lucky in that regard that it's a younger group, a less vulnerable group. But, you know, Art Howe, Artie's like 72 or 3 now, and he was hospitalized with this, and he's in great physical shape. And as far as I know, no underlying issues other than the fact that he's you know, of a certain age.
All right, I have to ask you this on behalf of all Cubs fans, Boog. Why do you hate our team?
I just do. I just know we grow.
So this, all right, for the fans who don't know what I'm getting at, this is something Boog and I and Joe Buck, we all talk about. The national broadcasters, the joke is, whatever team it is, I hate your team. And the idea is that every game you call, both sides think you hate their team. How do you deal with that?
Don't care. I really don't at this point. I find it's one of those things that there's just a certain silliness. I'm not going to be able to sprinkle the world with self-awareness. It's just the way it goes. I mean, look, I will tell you this. So you guys are awesome and good friends, and the Cubs fans love you. But Len Casper, there's a segment of the population, that of the Cubs population, that if I really steered this conversation and we started to talk no hitters, there's a segment of the Cubs population that would want to punch you in the face because I share the same sensibility. And that is that you and I have this fan base thinks an ability to jinx no hitters, which we don't. Right. And after 5 innings, I am going to, Jake Arrieta's throwing a no hitter, and I'm going to tell you he's throwing a no hitter. And I'm going to keep telling you he's throwing a no hitter. Sorry. But I get it. You know, people want to, I think the other thing is they just get used to it. And so what ends up happening is anything positive is hurt. I think even for you guys at times, anything positive is heard as neutral and anything negative is heard as actively negative. I don't think they hear the fans don't hear it with an objective ear. They hear it through the prism of going into it thinking that for some reason we're beefing with the Cubs.
Well, I think Joe has it incredibly a difficult time because of his father being the longtime voice of the Cardinals, and I think Cub fans are really sensitive to that. But we all know Joe really well. He loves the Cubs, and I wouldn't say he was actively rooting for the Cubs to win the 2016 World Series. If the Indians had won it would have been a great story, but he was excited. He should have been to be the man to call the final out to clinch the first World Series championship in 108 years. But there are a lot of Cub fans who will never understand that and never agree with it. But that's just the way it is.
I'm with you. I don't even contemplate it. I think that it certainly gets elevated / exacerbated by social media. But it's just it's one of those things. You know, Twitter is a complaining platform. And the one that I get as a national guy, if there's one way to push my button, like for the most part, people want to beef. Why, you have bias against the Cubs. Also, by the way, for those of you writing on Twitter, the next time you're accusing me of bias, you got to remember that it's biased, like with an E and a D when you're tweeting at me. You're showing bias against the Cubs or you're biased. You got to remember the E and the D because a lot of times you guys, when you're angry and you tweet at me, you forget to include it. But the other point is there's nothing that pushes my button more than this one. And this happens to me not a lot. It's like 10, I'd say like 12 times a year, 10, 12 times a year. And that is this. Somebody will tweet at me to correct me for something that I said wrongly on a game broadcast that I'm not doing. It's amazing. And then you tweet at them and say, you know, I'm not doing the game. You feel like taking a moment and, you know, maybe just meditating for a second on the idea that you're actually doing the thing, not doing your homework on who's broadcasting the game that you're accusing the broadcaster of doing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think it was a Baez home run in San Diego, and the Cubs Twitter account posted the home run, but it had Don Orsillo's call. And I got the, Len, you could get a little more excited for a Baez home run. And
really,
what are you going to do?
Right? Love that.
Well, and the problem you have, Boog, is you have to be anti-Cub because you're saddled up next to Sut, and he's so pro-Cub, you have no choice but to take the other side.
Well, I said to him one broadcast, I said, how many times are you going to drop we on the air tonight? we have fun with it. And to be honest, look, Sut's connected to the Cubs. I still feel like he's capable of doing a credible job in those games. It's not ideal for sure, but, you're discussing what's taking place on the field. But I also love giving him a hard time about it as well.
Right.
We have a little mystery guest thing here that we're going to do. But before I do that, Boog, I want to ask you about David Ross, your now former broadcasting partner.
Yeah.
And your thoughts on him as a big league manager.
I think he's going to do really well. I don't think I have anything to add that hasn't been written. I mean, I've been asked about it a lot. We worked for the last, 3 years. Wait, 17, 18, 19. Yeah, last 3 years. And it was a blast. I knew David from his days. I met him as a big league broadcaster, but then I got to know him when he was a player with the Braves. So we had that connection, developed trust. And I think he was just longing for competition. Are we allowed to curse on this? No, it's fine.
You can curse if you'd like. We'll bleep it out if we need to.
Right. So my thing on David Ross is, and Len knows me well enough that I fall into this category as well, but David Ross, sneaky asshole. Like he's just one of those guys. It's like, oh, David Ross is so nice. The Dancing with the Stars guy. I love him. Nah, David Ross, a little bit of an asshole. And I have it too. I do. You know what I mean? Like, but he's sweet. And so like the one thing that I said, yes, Anthony Rizzo and Chris Bryant, those guys and Jason, they're friends. And he will have no problem airing them out or directly saying his ability to lead and lead people that are close to him, in my opinion, will not be a problem in any way, shape, or form. I think he's going to be excellent at it. I think that as a manager, there will be, not that the game is as challenging tactically now, but I do think there's just that all these things become automatic in your head after a whole bunch of reps. And so I think he's going to do a really good job. And I think they made a good choice. He was an obvious choice for obvious reasons. And in my opinion, in this instance, those reasons are correct. He will be very good.
Dear adventurers, enjoy a summer of excitement with Toyota. Keep it wild in the rugged 4Runner. With its heritage of toughness, the 4Runner is ready for just about anything. Take charge in the 2020 Camry and conquer mountain roads with its available all-wheel drive. Or plan an epic road trip and get comfy while you cruise with your crew in the roomy Highlander Hybrid and drive confidently all the way with electric on-demand all-wheel drive. Whichever you choose in a Toyota, you're sure to make the most of summer. Soak it up, Toyota. Visit your local Toyota dealer or toyota.com to learn more. Mystery guest, can you hear us?
Hello. Can you hear me?
John Shambi is with us.
Sign in, please.
Can you speak a little more loudly? So maybe.
Hello. Can you hear me? Is it? Are you there?
It's Larry King.
Seattle. Hello.
One man.
All right, Boog. You can ask mystery guest questions to try to figure out his identity. How about that?
This is amazing, and I don't know who this is. Mystery guest, have we ever worked together?
Yes. Yes, we have.
Wow. I want to hear your voice more, but you're masking your voice a little bit with a terrible type of impersonation, huh?
Yes, I am. Delighted to see you.
You are amazing. Jason Benetti, welcome to the podcast. I love this.
Thank you so much.
You know what? I got to tell you something. If you hadn't done it, I don't think I was going to get it. I don't think I was going to get it.
And you didn't really character him very hard, Boog.
And then the other part of it, yeah, it's hard. Benetti, good Lord.
I was gonna do a movie preview of you as Syndrome from The Incredibles, like one man's journey against a family of elastic people.
All right. So, and the best part is, up until a month ago, my first question would have been, "No, we haven't worked together."
Yes.
Jason Benetti and I got to work together on a KBO game, and I will tell you from the bottom of my heart, it was as fun as anything I've done in a long time. Like, it was so much fun. We just, oh my gosh, was it a blast.
I feel the same way. I got off that game and called you immediately. And what you said was perfect. You know, like Boog says, you know, sometimes people say that was more fun than I expected, or that was less fun than I expected. That was as fun as I expected, and that's great.
Yeah, it was exactly as fun as I expected. I mean, Glenn and I had talked about for years wanting to do like a radio game together, something like that. And every year, Dan Shulman and I call a radio game together, and we have a blast. But oh my gosh, Jace. And then Len, a couple of times on the broadcast, I just couldn't help myself. He would be calling play by play, and my autopilot kicked in. It happened twice where he's answering a question and all of a sudden the ball's in the air and it's his play by play inning. And then I just like old school, just, and there's a fly ball to center field. And then I'm like, and he's like, Hey, what
are you doing? Get off my turf, pal.
You owe me a batter. And I still owe him two batters, by the way.
Well, there's so much pride as a play-by-play announcer. Like, I think play-by-play announcers, we all just get really excited when we roll a story right into the play-by-play.
Yeah.
Like, we've somehow solved electricity or something.
Yeah.
Like a new form of electricity, right? That's cheaper and easier. Yeah. Like, it's cleaner. And all we've done is literally say, like, and the 2-2.
Yeah.
Like, that's it. We've said, and with a fly ball to center, and we're like, wow, look at the magic we have created. And it's just a segue of conversation.
Hey, I've got a question for all three of you guys. And you can speak generically or specifically. What is the worst thing that a color guy does to a play-by-play man? What annoys you the most about an analyst?
Oh man!
Is it when I talk over you when you're trying to talk?
No, this is so easy, JD. This is so easy. It's when an analyst has too many rules for dialogue. Like, there are things that you can't say to that analyst because it'll hurt their feelings or it'll like fluster them. I had an analyst who I think is a very good analyst doing college basketball like 3-4 years ago, and during the break, the analyst said, "Okay, so you say this, and that'll set me up for this, and then you go ahead and say that." And I was like, no, we're not.
I'll send you the script tonight before tomorrow's game.
Boom. Then I want you to answer next.
I agree. I think any rules generally are bad. JD doesn't have any, which I love. The fact that I can kind of go anywhere with him. I think the biggest annoyance I have, JD, is just when an analyst won't disagree with you. And you have no problem disagreeing with me. And I love it. I love if you have an opinion, you will give it. And I think when all you do is agree all the time, it's not real life. And the broadcast should kind of mirror what the conversations are off the air.
Yeah.
Len, it was your chance to tell JD he's got really bad breath, by the way.
Yeah, that too.
So, Boog, what's your biggest pet peeve?
I think it's probably cliches, like just an overabundance of cliches, because I want to be engaged. You know, I like to you know, to get into the analytical stuff. I absolutely want someone that's willing to disagree. But when you're dropping just a barrage of cliches on me, I probably have a tendency to get a little, I check out or get agitated.
Yeah, but you know, you have to take it one day at a time, though, Boop. You really do. And you have to stay within yourself, too, while doing that.
What's your biggest pet peeve from your seat, JD?
Yes, I want to hear this.
Oh, man, yes. I don't know.
oh, come on. You asked it.
Well, I would say, and this goes back to earlier in my career. I hate to pick on the deceased. I used to work with Milo in Houston, and Milo was very scripted, and he had very, like, he would say something, and then he'd point at you, like, he wanted, now's your time to talk. And a lot of times it would be something that you really couldn't speak to. Like, he would rip an umpire, and then he'd point at you, and he wanted you to jump on board with him. And I didn't know what to do. When I first started, I would tend to agree with him because I was brand new to this, and I had no idea. And I go, oh, that's right, Milo, that guy really stinks. And then I had a conversation with Larry Durker, who preceded me in the booth and before I became the manager. And Dirk said, at some point when he was working with Milo and Milo would cue him like that, he would just look at Milo and just shrug, like, I got nothing. I'm not jumping on this train. And I'm not going there with you. And the other great Miloism was, if you would, and when you're new to this, and I would tend to get a little too wordy sometimes. And I'd look over and he'd be drumming his fingers on the countertop, just looking at me askance on the corner of his eye, like, you've taken up too much time here, Pally.
Right. My first year, I was doing the pre and post game stuff, and I interviewed Milo. And by the way, alert, a crappy Milo impersonation about to come. And I asked Milo to do the pregame show. And I asked him, I said, Mr. Hamilton, do you have 3 minutes for our radio pregame show? And he invites me into the booth and we finish the interview. And as we pop out, Tommy Hutton is coming out of the home TV booth and he sees Hut. So we're walking down the hall together and Milo looks at Tommy and goes, hey, Hut, kid asked me for a 3 minute interview. I gave him 5.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, so good.
Beautiful.
So Jason Benetti is the TV voice of the White Sox, for those who don't know. And before you jumped on as our mystery guest, I asked Boog why you hate the Cubs. I will not ask you that question, Jason, okay? I promise.
Answer okay. Anyway, though.
Should I use my real voice or the...
No, I think
silhouetted.
I think we should let people know that there is a rivalry between the White Sox and the Cubs, but on the broadcast level, we all are good friends. And I've always appreciated the relationships. And it's going to be interesting this year because 10% of our games will be against one another, huh?
Yeah. When I get asked about the rivalry, one of the first things I say is I grew up being a part of the rivalry. So that's still in me. But there are a lot of people over on the north side who I'm friends with. I did not know that extended to the broadcast level. That's new. But I would say I love the idea that the last couple games of the year could be for playoff spots for both teams. That excites me to no end for the city of Chicago. And I don't think any of us is on board in believing that baseball is going to somehow magically wipe away COVID-19. That's not going to happen. But, like, to have Chicago versus Chicago Cubs Sox the last 3 games of the season excites me probably more than it even should.
In terms of calling games remotely, we asked Boog about the KBO stuff. What's your takeaway as you get ready for a unique broadcast schedule?
I'm excited. I think other play-by-play announcers probably don't like me because my vantage point on this leads to us being in worse situations. But like I did 3 seasons of football that were produced remotely and had a slight delay on the monitor. I've, you know, KBO like Boog has done. I don't want our situations to get worse. Like, I want to be in the ballpark very badly. It's a much better experience for the viewer. But my opinion kind of is bring it on and let's put on good TV anyway. And I know that doesn't serve our industry as well as like pushback. And I have pushed back on things that I think are fair or unfair. But I do think nobody at home cares about our situation.
Yeah.
Zero people care about our situation. They want to enjoy the game. And I do think it's our duty to put on as good of a telecast as possible, even if we're the all like the last couple days we've done Sox games where it's been produced by the scoreboard room and Chuck and I just go for an hour. And if it's not good, it's kind of our fault. So that's my stance on it.
It's both, though, right? Yeah, I agree. I think we all want to do the best television we can, the best radio we can, and do the job that we're paid to do. But Boog, I do have some concerns about precedents being set in moments like this. JD and I talked about the universal DH and whether or not the National League would continue it next year. I don't see any way we're going to go back. I just think that there are a lot of things that are going to happen this year that are going to stay this way, at least for a while. I worry a little bit about clubhouse access for writers and other people. You know, I'm trying not to be selfish about it. But do you have any concerns about anything going on this year that could become permanent?
All of it. I think you're 100% right. I think these are cheaper alternatives. The lack of access. Look, it's one where, I mean, if you guys don't want to say it, I mean, I'll state my opinion. You know, they may not care, but they should care a little bit because we can do a better job. I think that as much as, like, and I'm fine taking the bullets on it in terms of, people don't like the media, and okay, but we're the conduit. And you're not going to, if we don't have access, you're not going to get the same level of connection to your team because you can't be there. So if we're not getting clubhouse access, if we're doing the games from home, the fan will suffer. Whether they think they will or not, the fan will suffer. So
I agree with that completely. I agree with that completely. What I mean to say is
no, we got to embrace it. I get it. We got to embrace it. You can't
corners
out about it.
Right. But somebody's got to advocate too. And so it's like advocate our tails off.
Yeah.
Can I curse them? No, I'm kidding. Advocate our tails off when we're off the air, and then when the headset goes on, crush it anyway. That's kind of my vantage.
That's better said than what I said, but just look.
And what I said at first, for sure. But that, you know, that's why you jump in and do the play-by-play in the middle of the game.
Can we get that on a T-shirt, Jason? Can
you? Yeah, please.
Yeah. Advocate when you can. Crush it when you put the headset on.
Yeah.
You can print up like 30 of those and we'll send them around to guys around the league.
But the game's got to, you know, the game's got to continue in that regard. I do think it's just so important. I mean, look. We did a spring training game back in March against the Angels where Riz and Bryant were mic'd up, and it was really good. And it's the type of thing that even non-Cubs fans, you know, were saying, wow, that, you know, to get star level players and that type of insight and being able to humanize those guys, the sport needs way more of that, not less.
Yeah, and just selfishly, a big part of the enjoyment of this job for me is not only being at the ballpark, but being able to have face-to-face conversations with players and people in uniform. And, you know, I've accepted that we're not going to have that this year, and that's totally fine. But, like, if 5 years down the road we can't be in the clubhouse, that changes the nature of what we do, and it's not as enjoyable. And I hope that we can get back to that as soon as it's safe. And we don't know when it will be safe.
I'm with you. And I think as long as we keep advocating, as Jason said, and delivering that message and not making it about our level of enjoyment, because I agree, I won't enjoy it as much either. But, you know, I told the story about doing the A's and the Yankees in the wild card game, and I was standing behind home plate, and Brian Cashman was standing there, and I started to have a conversation with him. And Billy Bean comes up, interrupts the conversation, shakes Brian Cashman's hand and said, What's up, Cash? You're going to out analytics the shit out of us tonight? And that's it, man. Like, and then when I tell that story on the air that night, you know, it's this story that happened organically that humanizes Billy Beane, Brian Cashman. It tells the world that Billy Beane is acutely aware as Moneyball guy that the Yankees are in on all that stuff. And that type of thing that, you know, takes up a fraction of the broadcast is just one of those things that just disappears.
Nuggets. Yep. Yeah. Little nuggets.
I think the other thing.
Also my nickname, by the way, that's my nickname as well.
Little nugget.
Little nugget. Yeah.
I thought Boog, you were going to say that Billy Beane came in and interrupted your conversation. Like, who's this guy think he is? I'm Boog.
No. That hurts my feelings a little bit, JD. I'm kidding.
I think we all do agree that traveling and being at every ballpark this year doesn't feel right. I don't want to speak for JD, but JD, would you say that's accurate? If given the option, you still probably wouldn't feel comfortable traveling and doing every game from every ballpark.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's probably unnecessary risk. You know, had we been able to tamp this virus down like we thought maybe we could, kudos to the good people of New York, because you seem to have crushed it there, Boog. And we're doing good here in Illinois, but there's a lot of other places around the country where the virus is not under control. So that becomes an issue, you know, traveling from ballpark to ballpark, obviously being on the airplane with the team. You know, they're trying to limit the number of people that the players are around. That's probably another layer that we don't need to have right now.
Yep, that seems right. We are kind of running out of time. JD, I know you wanted to get some dirt on me.
Yeah.
You have two people who know me fairly well, so I'll let you have the stage.
Okay, if we could have some theme music. Gentlemen, you both have some history with Mr. Casper. What, give me your best Len dirt, if there is any.
Wow.
Okay, so mine, I have never said this publicly. I've never said this publicly, and I can't believe I'm sharing it right now. Len, I don't know if you remember this, JD, but in 2015, when the Cubs played the Nationals, we all got together. I had sent Len a note and said, "Hey, are you going to be around?" I was living in Arlington, Virginia at the time, and we went and we watched the Stanley Cup Finals at a Champs in Crystal City. I believe it was. And we all got together. And then, you know, Len and I, our friendship grew from there. And Len sent me a note a couple months later letting me know that the Sox job was coming open. And this all has been a clever ruse to get a terrible play-by-play announcer installed in the South Side.
so he can rule the city.
I cannot believe I'm sharing this. But finally, you know, like in a pandemic, you feel honesty bubbling to the surface. And there were so many better options. And Len said, you know what, this guy, we can pass him off as the right guy because he's good enough. But there, you know, there are a couple levels below really great that we know he'll be. Like he'll go do a math competition in the fourth inning. Who's ever done that? And so this is all, Len is a mole working to sabotage the telecast on the South Side of Chicago.
And good enough with air quotes.
Fair enough. Boog, you got anything?
Man, you know, the one thing that it's funny that I do remember is when I got the Marlins gig.
He did the same thing with you?
Well, no. He flew in and we watched the Stanley Cup Finals together. No. I still can remember Len sent me an AOL instant message saying congratulations. And I still remember that. I think that the only dirt that I love to tease Len about was that, he was on the 2003. I always like giving him a hard time about the 2003 Marlins coming back to beat the Cubs, because I just want to make Cubs fans aware that Len was really, really happy. And Mike Mordecai hit one into the gap, and Len was like basically jumping on my shoulders. He was so happy.
Yeah, well, that happens when you're with a team.
You want him to win. Yes, yeah. Exactly. And you still have AOL, right, Boog?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I do.
Yeah, what's up with that?
I'm old, Len. I don't feel like changing it. Len, can I ask you this? Now that you've gone to the digital route, what happened to all the five-color pens that you used to buy?
I still have some of those. I've given most of them away. Do you need any?
You know what you should do? Like, so when I work games with Dick Vitale, he has a signed picture. So somebody comes up to Dick Vitale and say, "Hi, Mr. Vitale," and he'll just hand them the signed card. And like, you should, as your thing with cut, like somebody comes up to you, be like, "Hey, Mr. Casper, I'm a huge," and then just hand them the five color pen and walk
That's
away.
That's good. JD, it would be like Digger Phelps, right? He hands you the Sharpie.
Digger hands you an autographed Sharpie.
Yeah.
And Milo, speaking of Milo, Milo always had a stack of his Hall of Fame cards available.
Like playing cards? Like a Milo Hamilton Jack of Clubs?
It was like a baseball card with Milo's mug on it, and he'd sign it, and HOF, and then he'd say something self-deprecating, like, "Oh, in 20 years, this will be worth a nickel," and he'd hand it over.
That's so good.
Can I ask a quick question?
You can.
Boog, do you still put up away messages?
I'm sorry?
On Instant Messenger.
I don't actually use I just use the email. I don't actually use AOL. So nice try, little nugget.
Yeah. Yeah. Prodigy.
Well, we've enjoyed this conversation. John Shambi and mystery guest Jason Benetti. Thanks for your time, guys.
Awesome. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Have fun, guys. This was great.
That was a lot of fun, as we anticipated it would be. And JD, as we look ahead the next time you and I chat here on Open Concessions, presented by Toyota, it will be the eve of opening day 2020. I'm getting excited.
Yeah, me too. We were able to televise last night the inter-squad game, and we'll continue to do so leading into the exhibition, the three exhibition games, then ultimately opening day. And right now, I'm just jonesing for some good competition. Wiffle ball would be fine by me, man. This is going to be fun, and hopefully, you know, knock on wood. You know, obviously, we have concerns with the testing and everything else, but hopefully, everything works out, and we're able to play the 60-game schedule.
Yeah, we are definitely taking things day to day. So for this week's admission, and by the time this airs, I may be in a good place, but I'm still getting used to the pumped-in crowd noise at the ballpark. We've been doing some scrimmages at Wrigley Field. I think it's an adjustment for everybody. It's an MLB mandate, and I think a lot of it is actually for the players, just to give them a little bit of comfort, and also you don't want to hear everything that's said in the other dugout.
Right, and so, you know, and I've talked to a number of people who have been listening and watching games, whether soccer games or some of these baseball games that are now being televised, and it seems to be a mixed bag from the people at home. Some people really like it, some people do not, but I agree with your point. I think it's valuable for the players to just kind of have that white noise, that background hum that you normally find at a ballpark.
Do you have anything gnawing at you this week?
I don't. I will say this: I'm kind of in favor of this three batter minimum for relief pitchers. The more I think about it, I'm kind of anxious to see how that plays out. I think that's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I am too. And one of many rules changes that we will discuss as we move along this summer. Special thanks, Max Berman, Joe Rios, Matt Romito, Daniel Green, Big Jim Obojkowicz, Shane McGuire, Adam Sobel for Jim DeShays. I'm Len Casper. Make sure you subscribe, rate, review, and share this podcast with your friends. And next week, we are scheduled to chat with Cubs Executive Vice President and General Manager Jed Hoyer. This is Open Concessions, presented by Toyota.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or
I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.